Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, hosted on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. My name is Greg Mahochko, and I am the founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. Easy for me to say, you know, it's only been in existence over 5 years. I'm joined by my good friend, fellow Husker fan, and broadcast buddy, Mr. Hoss Reuter. Hoss, before we get to football, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, you know, feeling like a little bit of a Cleveland Browns fan. And I also feel like Charlie Kelly from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you know, explaining who Pepe Sylvia is with my schoolwork and keeping up with that. But I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm going to get by. It's funny because Sunday morning, you know, we're recording this, obviously, Sunday night. Game was Saturday, and this will drop Monday morning, so it's a good time to record. My Sunday morning, I was, you know, took my boy to church, and I was dressed in all black. And I hadn't worn a tie in a while, so I just wanted to wear a tie to church, and it just happened to be black on black on black pants. Went to the grocery store with my boy, and when it was time to, you know, sit down, relax, I put on Smokey and the Bandit, and I hadn't seen that movie in a long time, and of course, Burt Reynolds just passed a few weeks ago, so I felt it was a good one to, you know, watch again. I mean, I hadn't seen that movie since I was a child. It's just not one that ever, you know, popped up in the catalog. I don't own the movie, but it was on Amazon Prime, so I said, heck with it, I'll watch it. Then about 1 o'clock or so, my wife's like, I'm going to go to the gym. I said, all right, sounds good. I'll be here with the boy. She said, yeah, if you want to, you know, get him down for his nap, that'd be cool. Because he doesn't, she takes naps, you know, or, you know, she puts him to nap differently than I do. She puts him in the big bed, puts on something on the TV that he won't have any interest in, you know, like no cartoons, anything that's going to keep him awake. I always thought, you know, like if I lay in his bed with him and throw on some classic Mickey Mouse cartoons from the 60s or something like that. No, he's a little too engaged in that. So I'm making a point, folks, I promise. So I put on Groundhog Day. And that's where I feel like Husker football's at right now. We're just kind of living the same thing with various little subtle differences week to week, but the same result, and we've got to go back and do it all again next week. As we transition, I mean, the Michigan game, the entire season, I think, you know, we've hoped that it would go better. I think we all thought it would go better. It's not gone better, and now that we're into Big Ten play and the competition is improving, it's only getting worse. That being said, this is another situation, and I used the term last week to talk about, you know, potentially this season, but this game was snake bit from Nebraska's first offensive series after the tip drill interception. Nothing went right after that, and a lot of things went wrong.
Yeah, it was about as worse of a start as you could ever want to see in a game like this when you're already outgunned. And it's especially cruel when it comes on a play where you scheme the defense into leaving somebody open, and like J.D. Spielman on that little dump route off of that RPO. And from there, it was like that one shot, that one sliver of hope that we had of pulling something off in this game just evaporated right before our eyes. You could tell that it was, you know, same song, different verse.
It was, you know, to their credit, Michigan did what good teams are supposed to do, and that's to deflate the sails early on, mm-hmm. and find a way to there's a very eloquent word that just escaped me, but find a way to I don't know, demotivate. I don't think that's the right word, but beyond that,
basically break our will.
Exactly. Yeah, and in doing so, they were able to impose theirs. I mean, they, you know, we talked in the preview last week that, you know, maybe the Nebraska defensive front seven might be able to do some things to Michigan's big boys up front. That didn't happen. You know, Shea Patterson had himself a nice day, and nothing went right. And I don't disagree with the, I don't disagree necessarily with the idea of pulling Adrian Martinez when you did.
No, me neither.
I, even though he missed, you know, the Troy game last week, it would, if things were in, you know, if things, I guess what I'm trying to say is he could have probably used the reps, but at what point do you just not want to pile on, you know, a 19-year-old kid? And I didn't see the sense in it. And we'll talk about, you know, other things, you know, other aspects of the game as well, but I want to make sure that we get this in. Because I don't want it to slip my mind, but Wyatt Mazur, you know, I know it's mop-up time. I know it's, you know, meaningless in the grand scheme of things, but for that young man, I mean, that's going to be a memory that he has his entire life. He went into the big house, and again, it doesn't matter the situation. He got a touchdown on the road at the big house for, you know, his home state team, Nebraska, you know, the Albion, Nebraska kid. I was pulling for him when they got down close to the end zone. I really wanted him to get that score, and I'm glad that it happened for him. Again, irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. It could, whether the final score was 56-3 or 56-10, it didn't really matter, but I was happy for him.
Absolutely. You know, it's always good to see somebody who's paid their dues get in, whether you're up 53 or down 53. You know, it's important. And so to see him get in and show what he's made of, show what he's got, and score a touchdown in the big house, you know, he fulfilled, you know, he probably would have liked to have been in a game where we were up instead of down, but he fulfilled a dream. And moving forward, I think, you know, from the standpoint of him just giving it all he's got when we're down 53 points, he's earned snaps moving forward. You know, and it's not a slight on the performance of Greg Bell or Divine Ozigbo or Maurice Washington, but you reward a guy's loyalty and hard work by getting him some snaps, and you never know. Mazur is a good athlete. He might give you a little bit of a spark offensively.
He reminds me a lot of, and it, you know, a lot of people might balk at this, or
are we talking skin color comparison here?
No.
Rex Burkhead?
No, I was going to say Danny Woodhead.
Oh.
A little undersized in the backfield. What I loved about watching Woodhead, you know, for a few years when I was up in Chadron was, and this is not a knock on Danny, I mean, he knows he's short, not that he's listening to the show, although he should, and he should do a call-in sometime. But it was always his coaches at the time that I would talk to on my radio program out there. They always said, you know, one of the, aside from his shifty footwork and his speed, is because he's small, he's able to kind of sneak in behind the lineman, kind of unseen, find the hole, and then motor through it. And I kind of see some similarities there between, you know, from Woodhead and Mazur. So, you know, obviously their careers took two different paths. You know, like you said, if he can work a couple snaps into, you know, some relevant – you know, some relevant snaps, and, you know, at least provide a different look, something that the defense may not be ready for, and you know, might spell one of the other running backs, you know, for a series or two. So you know, like I said, I was just really proud of him at that moment, and you know, hope that we can see some more of him. I was
really impressed with his vision on the zone runs. You know, he was hitting the, finding the open hole and he's hitting the hole with, you know, good acceleration. He kind of would, you know, be able, when he'd bend it back against the grain, you know, showed good body control, kind of leaning like a track runner going around the bend, you know, there. And I'd like to see him get some more reps. At this point in this season, we're 0-3. I mean, you got to leave no stone unturned. You got to reward a guy for sticking it out and, you know, keep working in the face of when everything has gone wrong.
Let's talk now about, you know, some of the more difficult aspects. And that's just that, you know, we talked about the tip drill, that turnover. You know, there were things that Nebraska needed to do well, needed to go their way for them to have success this past Saturday. None of that happened, whether it was turnovers or special teams or penalties. The Tyjon Lindsey muffed punt was absolutely ridiculous. And I'm not one to call out a player, but he knows better, you know. And I don't know if he just got a little too cagey and thought he might be able to provide a spark, you know, to use that word, or you know, something that he saw made him think it was a good idea. Obviously, it ended up not being a good idea, and so that was a big blunder there. Poor Adrian Martinez, he just didn't have a whole lot of time to do anything. And without him getting into a rhythm, the offense never, you know, found a groove at all.
No, you know, we struggled to protect him with our pass protections, and it was a little bit of being overmatched physically in addition to, again, pre-snap miscommunications and missed line calls, guys not knowing who to block. Michigan overloaded our blind side multiple times and exploited that B gap between Brendan Hymus and Gerald Foster. Our issues in pass protection with that B gap have gone back to the Oregon game last year. And at some point it's up to the player to identify those issues up front. And then in the running game, we couldn't get a push. We weren't going to, even if we were on our A game, we weren't going to get much of a push on that front four from Michigan. So, you know, as disappointing as it wasn't altogether shocking.
Let's talk about that, because it's a, I know that, you know, injuries and, you know, losing, Adrian Martinez for over a game, you know, the Troy game and the end of the Colorado game. Losing him almost seems like the entire team has regressed a little bit. And I know that Michigan's a better team than Colorado, and Troy may or may not be. But it just seems like as an entire team, they're not as good after three games as they were, you know, the first half of Colorado. Well, let's say the end of the third quarter of Colorado, because the first half wasn't really good anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I just kind of feel like it goes back to, you know, being snake bit. When something goes wrong, guys have a tendency to kind of pack it in mentally. You got to have better mental toughness than that. It reminds me of that first game of the Mike Riley era where BYU hits that Hail Mary at the end of the game and whatever, you know, culture that was starting to be established by that staff in the locker room, you know, just quickly dissolve. And from the sounds of what Frost has talked about, you know, with guys going off and doing their own things and, you know, guys not exactly buying in, paying attention to detail, doing the little things that, you know, when you do enough of the little things right, it has a compounding effect to, you know, become the big things. I think that, you know, guys, when things go wrong, they wilt in the face of adversity. And you saw that when Laviska Shenault hauls in that pass to go up 33-28 on us. And then when Adrian Martinez before that play, Adrian Martinez gets hurt. And then against Troy, you know, things kind of spiral off the rails, you know, with the punt return. And then from there, it's just a litany of errors where guys start losing confidence in the face of adversity. And that's one of the biggest things where, you know, you got to control what you can control. You can't control the fact that the guy across from you might be better than you, but you control your own preparation. You control your own, you know, practice habits and your own, you know, your own mindset. And so it's disappointing to see that we're still snake bit, but when you consider the, you know, the inconsistency and just the fragile foundation that this football program has had since 2014, it's not altogether shocking. I mean, we're on our third head coach, fourth defensive coordinator, we're on our fifth safeties coach, three different strength coaches. So that kind of inconsistency, guys, you know, they don't have a firm foundation of, you know, values as a program that are entrenched to fall back on when things go wrong.
What was it, and I'm probably paraphrasing and or at least not getting it quite accurate as I should, but did Frost say something in his post-game presser about, you know, if you do things wrong on Thursday, you can't expect to do them right on Saturday?
Yeah, he did. And when he said that, I just kind of nodded in agreement, because it's like taking a test, you know. And, you know, being in school, it's like, you know, you go to class all week or for multiple weeks, you know, with a test coming up. And you pay attention, you take notes, you prepare, you study, you get the fine details of everything. So, you know, a couple days before that test, or, you know, when you're walking in to take that test, everything, you know, you got everything down. You know, it's just a matter of going out there and, you know, answering every question right. And a football game is really no different, except it's much more physical than sitting at a desk taking a test. You know, football game, you know, you study, you know, you prepare your body all week, you prepare your mind all week, pay attention to the details of how a defender might play a certain block or a certain call that the defense might be in on third and long. You're ready to just turn it loose and play football. Instead, with not being prepared, if you don't have those details down by Thursday, they're not going to come to you in 2 days by Saturday.
There was I think what happened on Twitter was, because there was something, I can't remember exactly who tweeted it, but they were tweeting a quote from Coach Frost. The video was Muhammad Berry. And, I mean,
well, I haven't seen.
I'm going to have to try to find it now, but it was, it sounded like he was, you know, talking about guys needing more. I mean, it sounds like Mo Berry has become a leader on the team. And I mean, we joked about it after the Colorado game and how he, you know, he's a damn man, you know, a grown ass man. And you made the comment about how he looks and is playing like an SEC linebacker. But mm-hmm. the statements that he made after the game were leader quality statements. And I'm trying to remember exactly what it was now, and I'll have to find the tweet and share it, obviously, with you and post it on when I post the article. But, you know, he was talking about guys not being prepared, you know, and not, you know, using that kind of cliche now of, you know, some guys maybe have not yet fully bought in. You know, so it just to hear those statements from him, you know, from another player, I think it resonates more with his teammates than if they hear it from the coach who's, you know, just been in the locker room for 10 months and not 2-3 years.
Yeah, it's always going to resonate more when it's one of your peers telling you to do something, you know. And in going to school to be a teacher and a coach, they talk about that being social proofing. It's an atmosphere of positive peer pressure. When you got students or players keeping other students or players accountable, you know, they're going to respond more to a peer keeping them accountable because they don't want to be ostracized or ridiculed by their peers more so than a authority figure, you know, saying those things. So that's the thing. It's Dabo Swinney and Urban Meyer talk about this too. Good teams are teams that the coach leads them, you know. Great teams are when players lead each other. And you saw, you know, it's self-evident of what, you know, the night, the run for Nebraska in the 90s was. It was guys holding each other accountable.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think you said it in the Slack chat room and not on Twitter per se. But you made a mention of, you know, in talking about the offensive line play, and I know you're probably wanting to talk more about, you know, the play or lack thereof this past Saturday against Michigan, but you said that, you know, in the 90s it took three guys were in the weight room 3 years before they were on the field, because that pipeline was, it was exactly that. It was the pipeline. It was, you know, you earn your spot over time. Because the depth was there, you weren't just walking onto the field, you know, as a freshman, redshirt freshman, or sophomore, and you weren't going to beat out an upperclassman, because they were, no pun intended, entrenched in that position, because they'd been in the weight room. They'd been through strength and conditioning and nutrition and the program long enough. So a lot of these guys are being thrust into that spot. And I want to hear your take on that versus, I think it was John, JDJ, John Damn Johnston, who said, you know what, if you're not happy with the O-line play, now put the young guys in. If you expect them to be the future anyway, get them the reps now. So what's your take on the guys who, you know may perhaps need a couple more years in the weight room to get to Big Ten size, versus the guys who are there who may have the size but maybe not the technique, maybe not the footwork, not the ability to do the job?
Well, I'll start off from left to right.
Right.
From left side of the offensive line to the right. Brendan Hymus, he had a rough game yesterday. There's no doubt about that. He was lined up against both Chase Winovich and Rashawn Gary. They switched those guys back and forth depending on their defensive call. And there was one play in particular where he got manhandled by Winovich. And, you know, on the surface, you think, man, you know, you're 6'7", you know, 6'6", 6'7", 300 pounds. You shouldn't be getting, you know, popped like that by a defensive end. But then when you consider, you know, Chase Winovich is a fifth-year senior. He's a grown-ass man who's been involved in college strength and conditioning, nutrition, you know, major college football practices going on 5 years now. Brendan Hymus is a true sophomore who last year played at about 260 pounds at right tackle. He's still learning, and he's going to be a really, really, really good player when he, you know, as he continues to develop. So from that standpoint, you know, it's unfortunate that he's had to have that baptism by fire, but it's going to pay off in the long run with Hymus. At left guard, Gerald Foster, I don't want to be too critical of him. I don't want it to sound personal, because it's not, you know. Someone can be, you know, a solid, you know, solid individual, but, you know, not exactly be up to snuff as a football player. And with Foster, you know, it's that preparation that comes into play. You know, there, too many times there are bad line, you know, line calls gets more into the center, but even with Foster, there are times where he's not paying attention that, you know, there might be a couple extra, you know, an extra guy to the left side that they can't account for in pass protection. Well, you got to make a call as a guard to alert the quarterback or the center to flip the protections or audible into a different protection. So it's a preparation standpoint. And then at center, you know, Cole Conrad, one of his issues is the line calls. You know, we struggled with this when he was the starter and early in the 2017 season. And then when we brought in Michael Decker, he was very much, you know, more in tune to what line calls need to be made. He was both the physical spearhead of the offensive line as well as the processing unit. You know, and it's no surprise with him being, you know, a really smart kid, you know, academic, all Big Ten. And so that loss of Mike, that offseason departure of Michael Decker is a point that not a lot of people are talking about, but it's, you know, as someone, as others have said to me and, you know, reading message boards and on Twitter, it was basically, you know, it's on par with Tristan Jebbia leaving, you know, if not more so, because the offensive line was actually rounded into form last year with Michael Decker at center. You know, they weren't going to be confused for the 94 pipeline with their execution, but they knew who to block because Decker had the correct line calls. And then from there, you know, if you know who to block, you're not going to be as tentative. You know, you're going to fire out. You're going to know who your assignment is. You're going to know what landmarks on that defender's body you need to get your hands to, where your feet need to be, because you know before the ball is snapped who your assignment is. And then, you know, at right guard, Tanner Farmer, he's playing his ass off. He's still somewhat limited, but he's playing his ass off. And you see that he's holding guys accountable, you know. Against Troy, Greg Bell ripped off a long run, but there was some miscommunication where the nose guard and the Mike linebacker stunted the same gap. And we got lucky on that play that they stunned the same gap because it opened up the front side A gap. But as Bell was still running downfield and the O-line was running to catch up so they could snap the next play, Farmer was talking to Conrad, and you could tell that he was pretty animated about what was a miscommunication, you know. And so, and then at right tackle, Matt Farniok is still learning how to be a right tackle. You know, he's got the physical attributes. In a perfect world, he would be an offensive guard. But, you know, there are some pieces along the offensive line at the tackle position in Hymus and Farniok that can continue to develop into being good players. Tanner Farmer continues to bring it. But right now, I think that left guard and center position are probably spots where you need to think about a change, you know, a youth movement at those positions. Maybe you plug Hunter Miller in at center and Bo Wilson at left guard, because at some point, you know, with this season looking like it could be potentially a wash, I mean, we're 0-3 and Purdue's coming to town with a war daddy of a nose guard and Lorenzo Neal Jr. We have to start thinking about developing for the future, because if we don't, if we do and if we don't all at the same time, you're looking at 2020 at the very earliest before we have a semi-functional to good offensive line.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned in the past that, you know, it at least helps part of the problem is Tanner Farmer at center. Mm-hmm. And I know this was particularly during preseason when Cole Conrad was out a little bit, and but Tanner Farmer at center and then Bo Wilson at right guard, that still doesn't help the left side. So, I mean, I guess, and I don't want to pick on Gerald Foster. You know, his teammates found, you know, saw enough in him that they voted him a captain. So I don't, you know, there's something there. It's just for whatever reason, perhaps not translating on game day. And that's very much armchair quarterbacking. I don't have anything against him. I'm not as smart as most people, but you know, that's, yeah. Like you said, if there's a weakness, I think when you're 0-3 and you've just started the Big Ten schedule, you have to start. I don't know. Part of me thinks that if you tamper with the lineup too much, then you're in panic mode. But at the same time, you have to be in, you know, rebuild mode.
You got to have a sense of urgency.
Yeah, you can't go, can't go 0-12.
No,
I mean, I guess you could, but that means that you're losing to Illinois, and that's just unacceptable. So,
and I still will never concede an inch to Iowa.
Now we're gonna pause here. And I'm going to send you that tweet on Slack that's got the Mo Berry.
Just received it.
Yeah. I just want you to watch that real quick and pick your brain on it.
In hard times, it's going to be it's people that, when you know, when they face adversity, all their life, it's like a reaction. Go hard. Go hard. You know, can't read. Learn how to read. You're not on the varsity team. Keep on working hard. Get on the varsity team. Stuff like that. And this loss right here, oh yeah, it's gonna be people that's gonna get off. And I hope they show right now than when we get to that team we want to be. And I hope that, because I mean, let's just be truthful. There's some people that want it and people that don't. That's why we playing the brand of football we playing right now. But we're gonna get there, and it's all positive. But I hope if people have any doubt in us, on the team, I do hope that they make the exit now and we get better from here on out. And Monday practice, we work our butts off and we get better from here on out.
That audio from Mohammed Berry comes courtesy of ABC8 in Lincoln and on Twitter at Andrew Ward, KLKN.
You know, in watching that, I remembered that I had read it. You know, I had read his quotes in somebody's tweet, but it's much more impactful when you watch the video. He's 100% right. You know, if you're a loaf, you might as well go play for the other team. You know, loafing is basically being a traitor. If you're not going to be prepared, you know, I'm just talking generally. I'm not talking about anyone specifically.
Sure.
But if you're not going to prepare, if you're not going to get after it every day, then, you know, you might as well let people know that that's who you are so they can, you know, the staff and your teammates can start making plans of rolling with somebody else.
Let's talk about because the offense was so anemic on Saturday, let's talk about the defense because they got to see a lot of the field. Not much of that was good. A lot of bad angles, a lot of missed tackles, a lot of looking like Pop Warner, you know, guys trying to tackle Big Ten, you know, college football players. Mm-hmm. I thought going in that the defensive line would have a better showing, that the front seven in totality would have a better showing. That didn't happen. And because that didn't happen, Michigan didn't have to worry. I mean, like Shea Patterson, not to minimize his efforts, but he was not a big factor because he didn't seem like he had to do a whole lot. He just had to manage the game because the running backs, you know, did their job. I mean, Patterson didn't have a bad game, obviously, but it just seemed like he didn't have to, you know, punch above his weight. Because, like how many times, you know, a couple times we heard DiCaprio Boodle's name being called or Trey Neal, but it just didn't seem like they were throwing the ball that much because they didn't have to.
Exactly. They didn't have to. And, you know, Boodle played pretty well in coverage. And Lamar Jackson, after a pretty shaky start, he actually started to, you know, it looked like the light was coming on a little bit for him in coverage. But defensively, our front seven got killed by a couple of things. First off, you know, that Michigan offensive line was an O-line of grown-ass men. You know, we got a pretty rude introduction, yet again, as we have over the past 8 seasons in the Big Ten, to what grown-ass man football is. And
it really is struggled. Groundhog Day.
What was that?
It's the Groundhog Day of the Big Ten opener.
Yeah, Groundhog Day, just like the, you know, what you said at the beginning. You know, that's the common theme, you know, of losses like this. And so we got pushed around. And then to exacerbate that were a couple of things. Defensive alignment that Eric Chenander was calling against some of the formations that Michigan had, especially a lot of the condensed, compressed sets, were problematic. You know, we reduced our defensive ends down to being 3 techniques on the outside shoulder of the guard, kind of in a bare front, which is fine if you're going to have your linebackers, you know, setting the edge against tackles or tight ends. But instead, we were bringing our safeties up to go against, you know, grown-ass men, Big Ten tight ends, and leaving our linebackers on the outside. You know, you could rep a down block between a Big Ten tight end and a safety 100 times, and that safety is not defeating that down block a single time. That tight end is winning 100 times out of 100. And so that hurt us. Caron Higdon's long run, his first long run of the game, came on a G lead play where their tackle and tight end, you know, blocked down and their play side guard pulled and kicked. And we had guys, you know, trying to spill the block or, you know, box it in. But we had no one from the second level, you know, filling. We had no look player, you know, who's fitting off of the force player. And so it's just – and that goes back to an attention to detail thing. Because it wasn't like, oh, we had guys in position, but they were just getting physically manhandled. It was we didn't have guys in position. They didn't know how to fit against it. So, again, that goes back to being in the film room, paying attention to what your coaches are saying. And, you know, Shenander had some really good first and second down calls. And then on third and long, we'd kind of get, you know, Harbaugh would throw out a call that, you know, would snooker whatever coverage or pressure that Shenander had called for third down. So it was defensively, I mean, Michigan essentially could have picked their score. And in a way, they did.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just kept playing. You know, they didn't have to sub out, put in the – I think they got down to the third string quarterback at one point. They didn't. Yeah. They didn't have to do that.
When you see a third string quarterback, your opponent's third stringer come in, chances are it's not a very good day at the office for you.
And by contrast, Nebraska's third string quarterback is not eligible to play. You know, so it's, you know, we're a tale of two programs right now. Nebraska and Michigan, it sure was nice that they kept, you know, the Fox crew kept bringing up 1997 and, you know, going 21 years back in time to when Nebraska was good at football. They're just not good at football right now. I want to touch on a tweet. I told you that I couldn't wait to deep dive into this tweet of yours. And you said earlier today, Nebraska had a pretty good game plan in place to exploit Michigan's man coverage yesterday. But as Nebraska taught Steve Spurrier long ago, quote, it's not game plans, it's athletes. Now, part of that, at least by my interpretation, part of that means the recruiting that's been lackluster, the development that's been lackluster. But I think more so, at least if I, you know, picking up the theme of what, you know, we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, really, is the preparation and the commitment from some of these players. And I don't know who's bought in and who's not. I see a lot of effort from a lot of guys, but I don't know who's quote unquote bought in to the system and who's just coasting because, you know, they're on their, you know, fifth defensive backs coach or their third defensive coordinator or their second head coach. Yeah, you know, I don't know who's who, but is it a combination of talent and will, ability and dedication? I mean, is it a combination, or do you think that scale tips one way or the other?
Well, I think at its simplest, what it is we've recruited well, and we've actually out-recruited Michigan on two occasions in the past 4 years with our recruiting classes finishing ahead of theirs. But in terms of getting a team ready to compete in college football, the talent argument is a two-pronged attack. First, you got to recruit, and then you got to develop. Well, we could recruit, but we couldn't develop under Riley. That's just a safe bet, you know, to say. Michigan recruited well, and they've developed well. So you got guys who are well-developed, well-prepared. You know, they've been in the weight room. They've had some consistency in the past 4 years. And then you got our guys who are learning a new scheme, learning a new culture. They've known nothing but inconsistency in their careers. And so it just comes down to the fact that athletes, whether, you know, they're naturally talented and you develop them, or they're maybe not quite as talented, but they can be developed. They're gonna come out on top more often than game plans will. And now when you talk about like that Tom Osborne quote from the Fiesta Bowl against Florida, you know, halftime talking to Michelle Tafoya, where he said it's not game plans, it's athletes. Nebraska in 1995 had the best of both worlds. They had phenomenal athletes, and they had arguably the greatest play caller in the history of college football calling plays, developing game plans. Greatest offensive line coach in the history of college football coaching the O-line. So, yeah, athletes are good at trump game plans.
Well, let's – I think people – what you touched on just, you know, in your response there about Michigan – Michigan has had more stability, obviously, in recent history. But I think people forget that it wasn't all that long ago that Michigan had Rich Rodriguez, you know. Mm-hmm. And so they – Michigan has been where we are right now. Perhaps maybe not to this extent, but they had some, you know, really hang their head years, you know, within the last decade or so.
They went 3-9 in 2008. You know, that's, you know, for all we know, that's probably par for the course of what we're looking at this year.
And that was the worst season in their history. So it's. Now they're, I mean, they're a top 20 team. At least I'm fairly certain they are. After the win, let's find out. As I pull up Google,
they're ranked 19th heading into yesterday.
Okay, and certainly new ones are out and they're 14 now. So they're a top 15 team, and you know, they've got their schedule. They've got their challenges. Nebraska has, you know, a longer list of challenges. I'm just saying, people who are jumping off the bandwagon, just, you know, when the tide turns, don't jump back on, you know.
Get on board or get out.
I think there's going to be a lot of space, a lot of room on the Nebraska ship when it's righted, because there's a country song. I think it's by Dierks Bentley. And Sideways. It's Sideways. He talks about that, you know, rednecks and fighting, and once you're out, you ain't coming back. That velvet rope ain't got no slack. Once you're off the Husker bandwagon, just stay off. Go root for Iowa State or
be an Iowa fan.
Well. I don't know. That'd be a pretty far way to jump from Nebraska to Iowa as far as fandom. But, you know, go
Kansas State.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I said Iowa State and Kansas State, and that's fine. It's a little disheartening to know that the Kansas Jayhawks have a better record than we do. It hurts to know that we're sitting right now at a 7-game slide. I just go. I'm going to sound like a broken record here, especially, you know, with the anniversary we all know is coming up later this week, which we'll talk about when we talk with John Dam Johnston later in the week for our, you know, weekly chat with him. I'm not saying I'm not diehard. I'm not saying that, you know, watching my favorite college football team lose doesn't suck, because it does. What I'm saying is, at the end of the day, I can't. This is just me. I can't let the outcome of a football game in which I had zero effect on, you know, like I wasn't playing, I wasn't coaching, I wasn't even in the stands. I can't let that outcome affect my mood past, you know, about an hour after the final horn. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I've got to be. I can't last year, I know I've shared this story on the podcast before, but last year I scared the hell out of my wife and damn near crushed my son, who was not quite 2 at the time, but still mobile. Something went bad in the game, and I jumped up and shouted an obscenity and jumped off the couch. And like I said, I mean, I didn't actually, you know, crush him or anything. But, you know, she's like, my wife says, I'm just going to take him upstairs. You know, I don't, ever since then, like, I watched the game differently. I guess I swallow my emotions type of thing. You know, I eat them away, you know. But, you know, I just can't, it's not that I don't take it seriously. It's not that I don't want them to succeed. I just can't let it affect me in the way that it used to. I'm getting older. My heart's not going to, you know, go on forever. You know, heart conditions run in my family. I can't let the Huskers give me a heart attack. So that's that. I probably just pissed off a lot of people who are like, you don't take it seriously enough. This is our religion. Well, maybe that's part of your problem. I don't know. Haas, final thoughts, man, before you know, I've brought it down quite a bit. What is a positive that we can take into our Monday and subsequent days as we look forward to Purdue? Give me one positive, even if it's not Husker football related.
Well, I'm going to keep it Husker related.
Fantastic. That's what we needed.
You know, I started off watching Husker football, watching Frank Solich coach, then Bill Callahan, Bo Pelini, bought into the Mike Riley experiment. Now I'm watching Nebraska play with Scott Frost as head coach. The rebuild is going to be over, but until then, a lot of things need to get fixed, and they will. You know, Frost didn't become a worse head coach in one offseason. Things aren't looking good, real good right now. But you know, be patient and just allow this thing to get built. I mean, I said it last week, but I'm going to preach it again. You know, just let it get built. This program needs a solid foundation, like a man in the desert needs water. So, you know, get together with your friends and family on Saturday still. Watch the game, you know, whether you like to yell or scream or whether you like to, you know, keep it a little more low-key, you know, that's up to you. But just always, you know, celebrate the small victories week to week. We didn't see any against Michigan. That's a function of Michigan being damn good. But
Bear Pickering had a nice field goal.
Yeah, you know, he's hitting on a hot streak now.
Was that two?
Two. Well, it's not a streak yet. One more, that's a streak.
Hey, we'll take it.
But yeah, I mean, just give yourself, you know, an hour to kind of be pissed about the loss. Hell, give yourself 24 hours, but, you know, move on from it. Go about your week, you know. Read the news, follow your team, check in on message boards, tweet about it. You know, be a fan, but, you know, just keep moving forward. And the other thing this week, you know, feels like fall has finally arrived. And if you're like me, fall-like temperatures are awesome.
Eh, I don't know. The only reason I don't like fall temperatures is because that leads to winter temperatures, and I'm really not a fan of that. And actually, I'll even change that. I don't mind the cold. I don't mind the snow and the ice if it all managed to stay off the roads. Unfortunately, that's not how snow and ice works. So we'll just have to suck it up and deal. But no, I completely agree with the ongoing sentiment that we'll probably preach week in and week out here, and that's Rome wasn't built in a day, and this Husker football program will not be rebuilt in a day, a week, maybe even one whole season. But we'll still beat Iowa, and that's that.
Hey, the last time we started 0-3 was 2 months after we dropped the bomb on Japan. But we did close out that season by beating Iowa 13-6.
And that's, I mean, for this team, that's a viable score that could repeat itself.
It really is. You know, it'll probably be a shitty, cold, icy day in Iowa City on Black Friday, and, you know, we'll just put the chains on the tires, you know, with the tailbacks and a little bit of Adrian Martinez running, and we'll grit one out, you know, and we'll rub it in Kirk Ferentz's face for the next calendar year.
And not him and the smug fans, the smug a-hole fans of Iowa.
Yeah, don't get me started on them.
And, you know, you see, we're nice in that, like, our friends at the Big Red Cobcast, they get the hate listeners from Iowa, and we don't, but I wouldn't mind it.
I enjoy talking a little trash with the Iowa fans.
I'm looking forward to it. So, hey, folks, just remember, we could be 1-11, 3-9, 3-9, because we'll beat Bethune, Cookman, we'll beat Illinois, we'll beat Iowa. But we'll pick up a couple more wins along the way. Later this week, we'll be visited by Travis Miller of Hammer and Rails, the Purdue community. We'll preview them, and of course John Dam Johnston back in the chair with us once again. that is going to be it for this episode of the Five Heart Podcast. As always, bring in the wisdom, bring in the funk, Hoss Reuter and myself, Greg Hooch Mahochko, and we appreciate you listening, sharing, downloading, subscribing, interacting on social media. Share your thoughts on the podcast, on the state of Nebraska football, just about on anything, on your favorite pancake recipe. I don't care. I love pancakes. They're delicious. But you can hit us up on social media, find the links on the post, and we're here twice a week during the football season reminding you that Five Heart is all the heart you need. Go Big Red.
Win the damn week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.